Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by the Audio Information Network of Colorado, dedicated to providing accessible content for all. Find us at aincolorado.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for Model Railroader Magazine. My name is John Arnold, and today we will continue to read select articles from the January 2024 issue. Visit us at trains.com. Old School Fun. This 8x13-foot HO scale layout was inspired by a John Armstrong track plan. Article by John Fruth. Starting in March 1952, Model Railroader began a series called Track Plan of the Month. A frequent contributor was John Armstrong, the dean of model railroad planning. He designed two track plans for the September 1953 issue. John rotated the center line of the layout's footprint 45 degrees and chose the title, On the Bias. One of John's two designs was the Central Minnesota Railroad, a tabletop railroad with 24-inch minimum radius. My railroad room was too narrow for an HO scale railroad with its axis canted at 45 degrees. To make the best of John's proposal, I altered the footprint to a dogleg configuration. One portion tipped at approximately 11.5 degrees, with the remainder bent to 25 degrees. I renamed my 8-foot 1-inch by 13-foot 1-inch layout the Wolf Creek Central. Prototype Inspiration. A few years ago, I visited the Aberdeen and Rockfish Railroad in North Carolina. The short line meanders approximately 50 miles west to east from Aberdeen, North Carolina, to Fayetteville, North Carolina. The town of Rayford sits midway along the line. Between Rayford and Fayetteville lies Dunderach. At Dunderach, the railroad makes a sharp turn to the north on an 8-degree curve. In the past, a sawmill received rail service at Dunderach. The sawmill is gone, but the sharp curve remains. I kept the curve and added a whistle stop named Struggles. River Terminal is approximately 1 mile beyond Fayetteville. River Terminal does duty as a universal interchange. Barges tie up to either receive or offload goods. Though almost anything can travel by barge, commodities handled at River Terminal include grain, lumber, coal, and petroleum products. The AR General Offices and Engine Terminal are in Aberdeen, but the majority of railroad business transpires along the line at Rayford, Fayetteville, and River Terminal. The railroad interchanges with the Aberdeen, Carolina, and Western and CSX in Aberdeen. AR's interchange with Norfolk Southern is about 50 miles to the southeast in Fayetteville. Adapting the prototype. On the Wolf Creek Central, the main features of the AR remain intact, but I changed some of the town names. Aberdeen is Rockfish, Rayford is Rising Sun, and Dunderach is Struggles. Fayetteville remains Fayetteville. River Terminal is still alongside the Cape Fear River. There are three distinct plateaus on the WCC: River Terminal, Fayetteville, and Rockfish. Short grades connect the three levels. Grades are approximately 2.7%. There is 20 foot of vertical easement into and out of each grade. Grades are typically 2.5% on the hilly AR. The model railroad is therefore not too far off base. I added a balloon track, reverse loop, at River Terminal to allow for turnaround and return to Fayetteville. River Terminal also offers some not too obvious operating considerations. On the WCC, empty cars for receiving materials at the riverfront need to be requisitioned from one of the three interchange partners. The cars can be parked at a ready track or at one of the interchange tracks on the layout. After loading at River Terminal, cars are routed either online or offline via interchange. The Cape Fear Riverfront, with its space-eating balloon tracks, caused a demand for more real estate. I added a grade from Fayetteville down to River Terminal, with its ready tracks and balloon track. The main line's end-to-end running length grew to 81 feet. The longest elevation on the WCC is below River Terminal and the corresponding Cape Fear River. A 1-inch dip on the balloon track below the finished grade above gave room for a 24-inch minimum radius. The casual observer may note that the WCC has no staging tracks. The underlying logic for this is that one doesn't usually find foreign traffic running end-to-end over the AR. Power on the AR typically pulls short trains to serve its many customers. It would be unusual for, say, a CSX or an NS train to appear at Aberdeen or Fayetteville to make a run across the line. The three ready tracks that bring cars for interchange on the WCC work just fine. Recycling 101. I salvaged the Flex track, a mix of code 70, 83, and 100, from previous layouts. I used the code 100 on the hidden tracks and at River Terminal. Track in the visible sections of the layout is a mix of code 70 and 83. In addition, there are six curved turnouts. A number 6 double slip switch connected to a number 6 crossover and a number 6 three-way turnout. The longitudinal L girders and the 1x3 framing were also salvaged from prior layouts. I purchased new homosote and half-inch plywood for this layout's flat surfaces. The homosote is screwed to the plywood from below. I spiked the flexible track and turnouts directly to the homosote with no roadbed in between. After applying the ballast, I believe the finished track looks presentable. I attached 6 60-pound casters, also saved from an earlier layout, to the bottom of the layout's legs. Later, I discovered the casters weren't sufficient. I should have invested in 100-pound casters instead. Layout features. The majority of the turnouts are manually operated with Caboose Industries ground throws. For hard-to-reach turnouts, I use Tortoise by Circuitron and twin-coil switch machines. To reach the center of the layout at Rockfish is a little longer than recommended by John Armstrong. However, there's little to operate out in the middle of town, so the longer reach is tolerable. I use Tortoises to control the double slip, the crossover at Fayetteville, and the ladder track at the head of the Fayetteville yard. I switched to twin-coil switch machines for the code 100 turnouts at River Terminal. The layout is controlled with Digitrack DB150 command station and a handheld radio throttle. I added a decoder programming track near the Fayetteville depot. On the main control panel, a heavy-duty double-pole double-throw DPDT switch toggles the layout between run and programming modes. Another DPDT switch on the panel lets me switch the entire railroad from DCC to 12-volt DC for troubleshooting. I divided the layout into 6 electrical blocks. The balloon track and the yard in downtown Rockfish are also auto-reversing zones. A 4-cycle car forwarding system is used for operation. It works well with the short sidings of the Wolf Creek Central. Short trains of up to 5 cars are more than practical. Enjoying the ride. The moderate size of the Wolf Creek Central presented everything that I wanted. The bias footprint offered challenges that made it interesting, but fun to build. I hope John would be pleased to see the layout designed on the bias. About the author. John Fruth is a member of the Chesapeake and Ohio Historical Society, Kokomo, Indiana's Midwestern Model Railroad Club, the Nickel Plate Historical and Technical Society, and the Fostoria, Ohio Rail Preservation Society. John grew up in Fostoria's Iron Triangle and was forever bitten by the railroad bug. John and his wife, Jean, live in Kokomo. In addition, John enjoys hiking and bicycling. Build an automated layout. This 6x12-foot N-scale model railroad serves as a testbed for supervisory control and data acquisition system. Article by Stephen Goodman. As a kid growing up in Montreal, I always used to read Model Railroader. I could never figure out why I was so entranced by the magazine, but I remember being able to read each one over and over again. During each summer, my family moved to Bethlehem, New Hampshire. I feel like I grew up in the White Mountains. Those summers inspired my second layout in 30 years, the Conway Scenic Railroad. For this N-scale, I focused on efficient benchwork and scenery techniques. The 6x12-foot model railroad is controlled by something you don't see every day, a Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition System, SCADA. Setting the stage. I built the layout in a carpeted, well-groomed basement. I had no room for spills or any permanent flaws. My goal was for this model railroad to fill as much of the uniquely shaped room as possible, so I chose N-scale. The entire layout building process took almost 18 years, including many long breaks and a move to a new house prior to the scenery phase. The layout benchwork includes sub-roadbed that I cut from 3/8-inch plywood. I used vertical risers to build gradual smooth grades. Few parts of the layout have no grade. Scenery takes shape. Once the track was installed and connected to the control system, I added the scenery that was to recreate the White Mountains of New Hampshire. I used extruded foam insulation board to build a thin shell mountain using a knife and hot glue. Once the basic shape was completed and the few cracks were filled with drywall mud, I carved the texture using a spinning wire and a drywall handsaw. Do this in a well-ventilated area and wear personal protective equipment. Yes, this was a messy process, but the carpet was easily vacuumed. The results were worth the bit of cleanup. I used latex paint, sometimes brushed, sometimes sprayed, along with common scenery products to capture the look of the White Mountains I was going for. As the layout progressed, segments were completed before the next one was even started. I did this to continuously change the project of the day and to keep the layout building process fun and interesting. I was gratified every time I finished a new scene. The last area I finished was the center, which included a train station slash hotel. I saved this section until the end, as I was using it for an access port to reach the rest of the layout. Old Man of the Mountain. One of the highlights of the layout is a model of the most famous landmark of New Hampshire, the Old Man of the Mountain. This amazing natural phenomenon used to be seen in Franconia Notch, high in the mountains and only visible from a single angle in the valley. The landmark fell one night in 2003. The profile of the old man remains on the New Hampshire license plates to this day. I recreated this famous landmark by building a replica of the rock formation that can only be seen from a single point in the room. I challenged visitors to find my version of the old man when they're standing in the room. It's fun to watch when they finally settle in the correct spot and it pops out at them. Making it automated. One of the main reasons I started this project was to integrate the model railroad with the SCADA system as the main control for all layout functions. I worked at a SCADA company that built equipment used in the automation of remote infrastructure, including gas wells and waterworks. The layout is controlled by a Control Microsystems SCADA PAC-32 system with auxiliary analog output, digital input, and digital output expansion modules. There are approximately 250 points available for control. The human-machine interface, HMI, software is Clear SCADA, a system that can control literally hundreds of thousands of points. Two semicircle elements at the bottom control two separate power supplies to the layout's five direct current blocks. No, this doesn't have digital control to the locomotives and is thus not ideal, but it wasn't the main idea for this layout. The throttle is operated by pressing on the triangular element in the semicircle as if you were pulling back on a throttle. The squares below the throttles control the direction, which is indicated on the block as a small arrow. The green and blue buttons are for turnout control. The green square indicates the current position of a turnout. If you want to line the switch for opposite route, press the blue button. Once the action is complete, a verification signal changes the colors on the HMI to indicate the action was successful. The system also uses optical sensors to detect which block a train is in at any time and what direction it's going. The system is able to indicate if there is any impending doom, such as a turnout lined incorrectly. If this happens, the system will trigger a number of alarms and actions, including slowing the train and sending a message to the operator's cell phone and the HMI. If the train gets close to the turnout, it will automatically bring the locomotive to a stop. Of course, the entire system can be run remotely from anywhere in the world over the internet using a phone app or through remote PC with the software on it. The Conway Scenic Railroad. True to my desire to be efficient, I elected to construct all the buildings using cardboard with printed details. There aren't many structures on the layout, giving you the feeling that the scene is mostly undeveloped. One of the most famous parts of the Conway Scenic Railroad is Frankenstein Trestle, located in Crawford Notch. I built a quick model of it with foam and balsa, using my imagination instead of exact details. When I understood that my layout might be covered in modeled railroader, I decided to create my own Conway Scenic locomotive and passenger car set based on what was in operation throughout the past 20 years. Of course, none of these are available commercially in N-scale, so I had to paint my own models. Conway Scenic number 2820 is a General Electric U23B from the late 1960s. I used lifelike Alco C424 version of this model. Atlas released the U23B, painted for Conway Scenic Railroad number 2820 in its 2019 release. The passenger cars are a mix of Pullman Standard, Canadian Car and Foundry, and other prototypes. An interesting exercise. The scenery methods that I used worked as intended to keep my basement environment clean. However, the use of a SCADA system to control the layout was complicated and demanding. To keep it operational for this many years has meant regular maintenance, changing PC as one got older, making sure the software in the controllers is archived in case it needs to be reloaded, and updating software licenses, among other items. I don't suggest anyone try this method to run trains, but it was an interesting exercise. My next layout will adopt a purpose-built model railroad control system. About the author. Stephen Goodman lives in Ottawa, Ontario. He is a mechanical engineer by trade with a PhD in materials science. His career has included periods with aerospace and industrial automation sectors. He is an avid classic car enthusiast and has been involved in model railroading since childhood. Modeling railroad maintenance operations. Model the work of those other railroaders with inspections and work trains. Article by Dave Abeles. When we wave to the engineer on the train rolling past on the prototype, it's easy to forget about all the other people needed to keep it rolling. There's more going on behind the scenes to support the train than meets the eye. Most important of these unsung jobs is maintenance. The art and science of keeping track, bridges, signals, and structures in a state of good repair, ensuring safe passage of trains carrying passengers and freight. It's a hard-working, tough, and experienced group of people who service track and change worn rail, calibrate switches and signals, and clean and repair railroad facilities and bridges. Unlike other modes of transportation, railroads own their property and infrastructure and must maintain it out of their own budgets. It's an expensive proposition. Most railroads employ an entire workforce of skilled labor and technical professions just to maintain these assets. When we talk about railroaders, we must keep in mind that the word also includes these other railroaders, the ones who never run a train, but create, maintain, and monitor the infrastructure to keep the trains moving. Modeling maintenance operations adds a new level of realism to your layout, regardless of era or prototype. Maintenance activity adds depth of context to a scene and allows a viewer to see more of the whole picture. On my HO scale, Conrail, Onondaga cutoff, modeling this group of railroaders provides for visual interest and operational challenges that help bring the layout and operation to life. Track, bridges, and signals. Track is foundational to railroading itself. Among the infrastructure group, the track guys like to say that they're the most important. They're the only ones absolutely required to run trains. No bridges? They can be filled in. No signals? Run on the timetable. It's a fact that track maintenance is central to railroading, and most railroads have a battery of resources to make it happen. Prototype track maintenance checks the gauge of the trail and condition of the ties, uses ultrasonic testing for rail integrity, cleans drainage ditches, and checks for settling along or under the track. Fortunately for modelers, manufacturers have produced an assortment of kits and ready-to-run equipment that helps us model this activity. Bachmann makes a variety of track maintenance equipment in HO scale, including a motorized tamper and a motorized high rail truck in various road names. Walters manufactures a Sperry rail car, a motorized former passenger car for rail inspection. Details West produces a kit to turn HO pickup trucks into non-motorized high rail trucks. Custom Finishing has an extensive line of cast metal kits for on-track equipment, including ballast tampers, tamper aligners, and other equipment. Many vehicles on the railroads were customized by that road, so there's an opportunity for scratch building or kit bashing. Cabs for work trucks are available as resin castings from a variety of sources, including Ralph Ratcliffe models, and as 3D printed models from sites like Shapeways.com. Another aspect includes some of the larger pieces of equipment used for different maintenance jobs. One of the most versatile is the Jordan Spreader, made by the Jordan Company in a variety of configurations. These have many uses, including ditching, snow plowing, and ballast spreading. Walters and Overland manufacture models of Jordan spreaders in various scales, and Shapeways has 3D printed options as well. Even if our models can't actually clear ditches, plow snow, or spread ballast on our rights of way, we can use these kits for static display or as run-through movements. Railroad bridge maintenance includes trucks equipped with specialty booms and mechanical arms that lift heavy steel beams or wooden bridge timbers into place. HERPA makes booms that can be kit-bashed onto trucks to represent knuckle booms, commonly used in bridge maintenance due to the tighter clearances restricting access. The firm also manufactures wheels and truck frames that are a great starting point for kit-bashing trucks. Signal maintenance, also specialized, involves a number of federally regulated inspections and preventative maintenance for signals, switches, and associated electronics. The signal department generally uses pickup trucks and some of the same boom trucks as the other groups, along with machines to place cable in ditches. With buried cable running between signal masts and signal cabinets along the right-of-way, signal maintenance requires close coordination from the track department when the track gangs with their mechanical equipment work in the area of signals and interlockings. For more information on signals and interlockings for your layout, my book Guide to Signals and Interlocking is available on Kalmbach Books. Trackside Details. All railroad maintenance activities require skilled employees with specialized knowledge. Railroads use employees from Bridge and Building Department, B&B for short, to handle bridge repairs, as well as repairs to station and other company buildings. These people use on-track equipment and other vehicles to perform the work, but also a variety of materials we can include in our layouts. Materials needed by maintenance crews in the form of new ties, spare rails, tie plates, and spikes are stocked wherever there is a little extra space on the railroad property. along with extra ballast and large stone, called riprap, used to stabilize embankments during floods. These stores and piles are simple to model using commercially available ties and rails, cut to length and stacked along the track. There are two major categories of railroad bridge track: ballast deck and open deck. Ballasted deck bridges use track plated in a ballast bed that's continuous across the bridge. Open deck bridges have wooden ties resting directly on the steel superstructure of the bridge and use back walls to hold the non-bridge ballast off the bridge. Some common bridge parts are kept on hand, but the majority of railroad bridges are custom built for a specific location, so standardized parts are relatively rare. Still, bridge ties are often kept on hand for use on open deck bridges. While these too are often customized, wooden ties can be quickly cut to length using handsaws. Steel shapes, girders, and trusses can be modeled easily from leftover bridge kit parts, as well as shaped plastic from firms such as Plastruct or Evergreen. A few old truck trailers or containers are often used as storage for small items, tools, and materials that are more sensitive to the weather. This is a good opportunity to include a heavily weathered trailer, perhaps from an earlier era or a predecessor railroad, on your layout. Prototype photos are great to guide your weathering effort, as well as deciding where to place the storage trailers. Finally, thanks to several figure manufacturers, we can populate our work locations with maintenance crews from multiple eras. Bachmann JTT, Pressier, and others offer painted and unpainted track workers and maintenance figures. These are available in modern versions with high-visibility vests and hard hats, and more traditional versions from earlier eras when such clothing and personal protective equipment, PPE, wasn't required. A view from the cab. Take some time to place some maintenance supplies and personnel trackside. An old siding or area can be used to stage a Jordan spreader or to display a maintenance vehicle or a kitbash truck. A working high-rail truck or ballast tamper can run between trains, adding a sense of prototype flavor to your railroad. Next time you're moving a regular revenue train on your model railroad, you can imagine giving a wave to the maintenance crew you've located around the layout. Remember, there are a lot of different kinds of railroader, and each one plays a role in keeping the trains moving. Getting it done. Maintenance operations can add a lot to your railroad's operating scheme. While most inspections can happen without interfering with normal train activity, some inspection work and a large amount of maintenance requires dedicated time for track to be out of service to revenue trains. This can be woven into the sequence of operations and often requires special paperwork and permission to ensure only the maintenance crew occupy the track. If maintenance is being performed by a locomotive with cars, often that movement is treated like any extra train. Examples include ballast trains, rail trains, and trains setting out new ties for future replacement. For other on-track equipment that doesn't reliably shunt the signal system, there are two major types of track permission for maintenance activity: foul time and designating a track out of service. Foul time is for activity that doesn't disturb the track bed or affect the integrity of the track. It's appropriate when an off-track crane is lifting supplies closer to the track or for most inspection activity. Designating a track as out of service is used for maintenance that may affect the stability of the track. This includes ballast tampering, bridge repairs, rail replacement, culvert construction, and the like. Operationally, foul time is granted and released via verbal permission from the dispatcher or operator for a maintenance crew to be on a certain track for a certain amount of time. On the other hand, because physical work on the track or bridge potentially impacts the structural integrity of the track itself, it needs more formal authority. Written permission is required to remove track from service and return it to service under the rule book that governs that track. For Northeastern Railroads, this includes the Northeast Operating Rules Advisory Committee, NORAC. Conrail is a member of NORAC and uses NORAC Form D to grant track authority for maintenance.